Robert Berry, and welcome to Retro Crush, the podcast, episode 43. We got a great show in store for you here. We're going to do the first of a few parts of our interview with Allison Arngrim from Little House on the Prairie. Yes, Little House on the Prairie. Such a great show. There's a lot of things that I'm fanatical about, and Little House on the Prairie is one of them. I know too much about that show. I've watched it, probably seen most episodes a few times, probably that and the Brady Bunch I know way too much about. But such a great show. I think it started around 72 or 3, and had just a great cast. You had Michael Landon, Victor French, who played Mr. Edwards. The girls were perfectly cast, with Melissa Sue Anderson and Melissa Gilbert there as Mary and Laura. Caroline Ingalls by Karen Grassel, an underrated TV hottie, if there ever was one. And just great. But one of the great things about the show was the Olsen family. You had Mrs. Olsen and Nels Olsen. Conversely, the weirdest couple that's been on television in quite a while. You had Mrs. Olsen, who was just this domineering, shallow, mean, henpecking bitch, for lack of a better word, of a mom, and Nels Olsen, her husband, who is just this poor, beaten down man who just put up with everything. But their daughter was like this spawn of Satan, Nellie Olsen, played by Allison Arngrim, easily one of the best television bad girls ever to appear in the history of the medium. So we talk about this. We had tried to get an interview with her, almost 2 years ago. And we screwed up. I guess there was some etiquette that we should have followed with the agent that she had at the time. We had asked her agent for an interview, and he said, hold on a second. And then I guess at the same time we found that she had her own website, and just on a whim we emailed her, because her email address was right on the website, and then that agent got kind of pissy with us and said that she's not going to interview with us. So about half a year passed, and we noticed that on her website she announced that she had a different agent. So we thought, hey, let's give it a try again. And boy, that worked just well. And I got to talk with her for almost an hour and a half, and it was just like talking to an idol for that long. And I come off as pretty fanboyish in this interview. This was recorded over the phone. It wasn't really meant to be broadcast like some of the interviews that we played on here. It was recorded just so I could transcribe it, so you're going to hear me mouth-breathing into the phone a few times, and the audio quality isn't the best, but I think she's dynamic enough to still make it a fun listen to. So we're going to go ahead and play about the first 15 minutes of the interview. We're going to talk about how she got the part on the show, and some of the real-life people behind the series that it's based on, and we'll be playing a few parts of this throughout the next week. Here we go.
Here, and I think we are ready to go. So, Allison, how are you today?
I am very good, other than being cold and wet.
Yes.
Like everybody else right now in California.
Well, I gotta tell you, I'm a big-time fan of Little House on the Prairie.
I kind of got that.
And, boy, my daughter and kids are, too. It's just so fun to see that's such a cool show that it's so timeless in how it's set that, you know, a kid from any generation can just start watching it and enjoying it. Do you find that you've got whole new generations of fans with the DVDs and all that?
I do. I have several generations of fans because the show really holds up. I mean, I've had friends tease me and say, aren't you glad you weren't on, like, you know, the Brady Bunch or something? Because so many 70s shows, well, they're dated. They become very much about the 1970s in America.
Right, right.
And whereas Little House really doesn't date, because, hey, it was the 1800s to begin with. So it still plays now, and it's very big in other countries. Whereas a lot of American TV is too American, Little House runs in like 140 countries at last count, but it's huge in France. It's one of the few American shows that's incredibly popular in the Middle East, because even in an Islamic country, well, everybody's dressed and covered up. There's not a lot of sex. You know, it's pretty safe.
Yeah, it's funny, yeah.
I mean, I joke about it, but I was told on authority that, yes, it really is Saddam Hussein's favorite show. So Saddam Hussein's a big fan. That's nice to know. But it's loved by all sorts of different people all over the world, and it really does hold up. And when we were on, first on in the 70s, they said demographically, like, our big audience was older women 40-plus, and, like, then their kids, and then the next group. And so that group are now grandmothers. So you have the older women from then, and then you have the young women who watched it then who are now moms, and now their kids, and then really, really little kids. And then you have, like, I know all these people my age who didn't watch it when it was on and then watched it in college in reruns, like, you know, did shots to it or whatever, and think it's funny. And so you have all these groups. And so I get email from people in their 20s who are sort of discovering the show because they like certain characters. They, like, think Nellie is funny. And from families who've been watching it for four generations.
That's great. Yeah, and it's amazing how much it's, I mean, if you're in Sacramento especially, I think there's two different, the Hallmark channel and some local channel play it simultaneously, and if you set your TiVo to get them, you can end up with four episodes a day if you don't watch
that's
it.
That's like if you're on the Canadian border, because the Canadian stations rerun it, and the American stations rerun it, and the cable reruns it. So there's some place, like, in the Canadian border where it's, like, on six times in a day.
Now, totally is this beyond the point where you get any kind of residuals from the show anymore, or was the deal not signed that way?
I mean, we, thankfully, were, because we signed in 74, we were after what they call the in perpetuity clause in, like, 73. People who were on series before that either get nothing or they get what poor kids from the Waltons, they get six airings and then the residuals stop. You get only
wow, that six. Quick, yeah.
Yeah, and then people prior to that clause got, like, Zippo. So there's a lot of people who don't get residuals. And then, so we had in perpetuity, so we did get residuals for a long time, but they get smaller with each run. So some episodes, they've run them 50, 60 times, you know, it's not that much. The foreign sales were kind of a buyout. And then there's some money from the DVDs, because DVDs and cable and VCRs and
everything
that was invented, it was sort of a retroactive thing, so it's a few cents. And I understand, in fact, that's one of the things SAG's been talking about, is upgrading how much actors get from DVD and video releases, because at the time it was written, no one anticipated, I mean, DVDs weren't invented, and they never anticipated that VCRs or cable TV would catch on.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's amazing how much these box sets are selling.
Oh, and huge, you know. Millions are made in DVD, so the union's kind of looking at, in the next negotiation, saying, guys, you know, yeah, we said you only had to pay us a percent of a percent for the DVDs, but we didn't know you were going to make $20 billion off them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we didn't think anyone was buying the darn things. So now that it's more people are watching DVDs than are watching TV, for God's sake, you know.
Right.
Hope maybe we'll get a nickel from that. Of course, I did do commentary and interview on a set of Little House DVDs for
Giant DVDs. And which season is this? Is this season six, is it? Just came out?
Season, I think I have interview, because I went and I did two interviews and two commentaries. I think there's interview on season five, and then interview, and I do commentary on the Mud Fight episode, so that's season six.
Okay.
And they haven't released season seven yet. I just, like, faxed in my final approval, whatever, of my commentary for an episode in season seven.
And that would be the year where your character gets married.
Right. The episode I picked is the one where I have the twins.
Oh, great. Great. So, kind of going back a little bit there, I was reading that you had actually originally read for the parts of Laura and Mary, and Nellie came apart, sort of an afterthought there. Were you as aware of the books so much, or was this sort of just what's this Little House on the Prairie thing all about when you're going in there as a kid?
Most people I meet my age, women my age, were like, if they're my age, were like about 5 years older, they were like huge Little House on the Prairie book freaks. I wasn't. I didn't read the books. I had no idea. And when I first went to the audition, the first one I went was sort of a general, was Ed Friendly sitting around with a stack of Little House books saying, we're thinking of making a show from this. Have you ever read these books? No. And, no clue. And, or as Michael used to tease us and say, what's with you kids? What, do you hang out in pool halls? You don't do anything normal, like jump rope. You don't know from the books. You depraved little children. So I didn't know about the books, so I read for Laura, and then I read for Mary, and then, yeah, when they called me to read for Nellie, I was like, who? How many people are in this thing?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Stunned then when I got the part, and they hired me on the spot. Now, of course, as soon as I found out, I like got the show, and then the books, I went, well, I guess I better go get these books. I did go out and get the complete set shortly thereafter and have read them all. And,
right, right.
And I totally see the attraction, so.
What's amazing how much, I mean, when certain literary characters get brought to life, for the most part in the books, Nellie was a, for the most part, a two-dimensional bully. You know, there really wasn't so much to her, and
not
you brought...
really evil.
Yeah, and that's so funny, because when you look at the Nellie character, you know, early she seems like just a spoiled brat. Other times it's maybe she's just misunderstood and doesn't get the right attention, but then there's other episodes where it's like she's wrote a pen mark from the bad seed, where it's like she's ready to, she'd kill somebody if she was given a knife, you know?
Thank you for noticing. Yes, wrote a pen mark.
You know, it's
a bad seed fan.
I was watching this with my daughter the other day, and it was one of my favorite episodes with the where Nellie falls off the horse.
Oh yes, and I pretend to be crippled.
Yeah,
oh,
pretend to be crippled so she can get candy and toys.
The
yeah.
Going down the hill in the wheelchair is everyone's favorite episode.
Yes.
Bar none, unanimously, and in several countries. If I say, okay, everybody in the room, what's your favorite episode? It's down the hill in the wheelchair.
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect point. Poor Laura is just putting up with so much abuse from the character, and then just, you know, there's a scene where you're getting poked in the feet with the pins, which is another memorable scene. And was any of that real, or is that done with fake feet, or a fake...
What they did is he's using, like, the dull side of the needle.
Oh, I see.
And they did kind of poke me in the feet, but it really didn't hurt. And I think there's, like, an insert shot where, like, the stand-in's foot encased, but it just wasn't pushing that hard.
Oh, I see. That's just such an excruciating scene to see this poor girl
really
pretending
awful.
To not show any.
I watch it and I go, ew, and my husband's horrified by needles, and he winces and goes, how do you do that? And I'm like going, I remember that, you know, they did actually have the needle touching my foot during the scene, and I was going, well, if this is as bad as you're going to do it, guys, you're not really hurting me.
Yeah, it's funny that you would have this scene like that, and then all of a sudden, you know, when everything falls apart at the end of that episode, you just see Nellie in her room, just, I'll get you, Laura, breaking every single thing in her room and just completely going psycho, you know?
Nellie, person, obviously was so dedicated to the idea that she was going to fake everyone out.
Yeah.
That she was willing to withstand what would have hurt. I mean, in my case, no, it didn't hurt.
Sure.
But obviously the implication is the doctor was poking her hard enough with the needle to see if she was really paralyzed. So... you know, they're implying that this girl sat there and withstood pain and said, no, I didn't feel anything. Just she can do this. Which is pretty sick.
Do you think Nellie ultimately just needed the right person to love her? Because it seems like the episodes when a boy showed some intense interest in her that she really did become... a very likable, nice person.
The whole Percival Taming of the Shrew kind of
thing. Sure, yeah, someone that could stand up to her and, you know, still say that she was pretty and everything,
too. Yeah, I say, you know, obviously, nights were cold on the prairie, now we know what was wrong with her, but, and it's true. Now, of course, that's what the French think. The French feel Nellie was just misunderstood.
Right.
Nellie is loved in France because they don't think she's mean. They think she's French.
She's the most personable woman we've ever seen.
Yeah, lovely girl. And they don't think there's anything wrong with her. But they had a whole discussion when I was in Paris. People were saying that, well, she's misunderstood and she was unloved and the poor thing. And don't you see, she's just jealous of Laura. So the French feel it was all a crime of passion and poor Nellie was just misunderstood, the poor dear. And I have had people say, well, that poor girl, look at her mother.
Yeah, it's certainly hard, and even the father role in that is just so bizarre. I mean, he's so...
He doesn't do anything.
But yet when he would, it would be so over... I mean, you'd see him like, well, I'll take care of everyone with a big old giant leather strap ready to, you know, to go to town.
Now, in today's more psychologically aware climate, I've had people say, Mr. Olsen should have taken that belt to Mrs. Olsen where it had done some good. And,
exactly.
And people said that rotten Mrs. Olsen, the way she raised that girl and Willie, of course the children were impossible. That ghastly woman should have been tried for child abuse. And there are people who've really taken Nellie's side and said, oh, the poor dear, of course she was a mess. So I kind of find it fascinating that everyone has read all this great stuff into it. apparently it was doing a bang-up job. Yeah, the character Nellie in the books, and it's so weird because we were playing not only characters on a show that had been characters in the books that had been real people. And that's
exactly, yeah.
You've got the, yes, Laura Ingalls Wilder. And that's quite a burden. I think that's one of the reasons that everyone from the show were all so typecast and it's so stuck with us. When you're playing someone who really lived, it's like having done Mr. Lincoln. You know, it never goes away.
Have you ever come across any of the descendants of the real people?
We used to get a few Ingalls people would always drop by the set now and again. We'd get an Ingalls relative would come visit. And I've talked to a couple of Ingalls descendants, but the most interesting thing I've met was I met what would be Nellie Olson's, I guess he's my great-grandson. Carrie lives in Texas.
Oh, wow.
And, Nellie married. I found out from this Nellie historian that Laura kind of fudged the whole Nellie thing. She kind of combined three people and made Nellie. There was a Nellie Owens in Walnut Grove who was mean to her. And then she kind of took the... But she didn't see Nellie as a teenager, only as a young girl.
Right, because in the books there's a Nellie that just mysteriously comes into her school again. Like, she just can't be rid of her.
Yeah. Right, yeah, so she's stalking her. Which is a great bit. Unfortunately, it wasn't true. There was this other girl, a teenager, who was hideous. And she kind of covered her tracks because... The story I got was that the girl who was so hideous, her father was a publisher, and so Laura wasn't about to diss a possible, like, employer. And so she did a combo of three people who were really nasty and made them this one girl.
Oh, wow.
But the real Nellie Owens, who apparently was quite a handful, she's buried in Tillamook, Oregon, and she married a guy, a Mr. Carey, who was, like, steamboat captain or something, and she had three kids and they divorced, which was scandalous at the time. And apparently she divorced for like moral reasons because he was a boat captain, he was always away and wasn't good. She like moved inland to provide a better life for her children. So who knew? And the family who I spoke to were related to Nellie, the Curries. They had said, you know, at first, you know, there's a lot of stuff people say, oh, Nellie wasn't really that bad, but they found this one aunt that before she died had seen Little House, and she'd been old enough to have known Nellie. And they said, okay, you knew Nellie before she died. You're old enough to have known her. So they watched, they said, what do you think? And she said, very accurate. So the story I've gone is, yes, Nellie really was bad. Because there's a whole debate. If you go to, like, Walnut Grove and these historical societies, they'll say Nellie wasn't that bad. Laura gave her a bum rap. She was framed.
Gosh,
but crazy. I've had the relatives tell me, nah, she's a total bitch.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen somewhere else before where they compared the character, I mean, as one of the better TV villains ever made. And I'd see up there with Eddie Haskell and her mom, especially. He's a great one-two punch for both of those.
I've met Eddie Haskell. I am the greatest villain ever, and I say that not even bragging, because I have my copy of Vanity Fair, which in, I think it was 2000, they did best TV everything. They did list. They had best TV dads, best TV moms. And best TV bitches, I was first. It was like me, Joan Collins, you know. And so I was number one TV bitch in Vanity Fair of all time. And then I was at a like TV Land child actor thing, and Eddie Haskell was there. We were on a panel, and we were sitting there talking about whose character, and we took a poll. We polled the audience. We thought it was funny. We said, what a funny panel that you and I are sitting there together. And he said, okay, round of applause. How many people hated me more? Okay, how many hated her more? And they went nuts. And he said, okay, you win. You're worse than me.
Well, that was sure a lot of fun. We're going to have a podcast every day for the next 3 days to catch those up. As my wife rolls her eyes at me and gives me a dirty look. That means less floor scrubbing for me. I do all the housework around here, so it's pretty tough to maintain this hectic pace. But, hey, today was a very exciting day for me. I got a call from my wife, Linda. She said, hey, you got a package in the mail, and it's from Warner Brothers. And I'm like, oh, my God, could it be? And she says, maybe it could. And she opened it up, and I got... 1 week before it gets out in the stores, the 10 two-disc collector edition of the 1933 King Kong. This is one of my favorite movies. It's never been on DVD. It's finally out. And I haven't been able to go through all of it yet, but it just looks gorgeous. I mean, I've seen I have a DVD from England that I've watched. I have a multi-region player, so I could play DVDs all over the world. And let me tell you, Eskimo porn is great. But in the meantime, back to King Kong. I mean, there's no scratches on it. But what I like is they restored it in such a way that it still looks like it's fresh from 1933. They didn't go overboard and, you know, clean it up beyond the point where it looks like it was filmed in our time. So you still see a lot of flickering lights and weird little contrast things that were in the original print. So really what they did is they just cleaned it up to look exactly as it should have looked when the virgin film first was taken out of the reel and shown in a theater. But one of the great features on here is a special thing that Peter Jackson did. Peter Jackson's directing the new King Kong movie, and when the first edition of King Kong came out, the very first, when it was shown at a screening, there's a scene where King Kong's shaking this big log and knocking people off into this ravine where they fall to their death. Well, the original cut of the film had a scene where there's these spiders and crabs and stuff down there that eat up and kill the poor guys that fall down there. Well, I guess that was considered too gruesome, and it took away a little bit from the pacing of Kong being the one that you're supposed to be afraid of. So it was cut out. Well, unlike some things that have been cut out, like from Frankenstein and other films, and put back in later, this was cut out of the film and then just lost forever. In the more than 70 years that's passed since this film was originally released, there's never been any trace of that cut film that's ever surfaced. It's just gone to the ages. In fact, there's only one photo of one of the spider creatures is the only evidence that something like that existed, and this script refers to it as well, the shooting production script. Well, what Peter Jackson did, who's again filming the new King Kong movie, out of his own cash, he simulated this missing scene, and it looks outstanding, because what he did is he filmed it and used the effects of the time. Even though he's making it now, there's stop motion puppets in it. He got guys that look pretty much like the guys that fell into the ravine, and they fight this giant spider and a scorpion. And at one point, they're on top of this rock poking at the spider and the giant scorpion, and the people become little stop-motion rubber puppet people, and it's that really funny, cheesy look where they get bit and carried up, and you just see the little rubbery legs flopping in the air. But, you know, we're going to do a lot more about King Kong. We're going to do a special King Kong episode coming up soon with a lot of audio from it, and, you know, the movie's coming out in a couple weeks as well, the new one. But, you know, easily this is the best DVD of the year. I thought it might be a toss-up between this and Meatballs 3, but, you know, I think it's settled. King Kong, the two-disc collector's edition, 10. It's only about $29. It's so worth it in so many ways. There's a ton of documentary. There's a full-length commentary with Ray Harryhausen, special effects genius. They even got audio from Faye Ray on here, you know, who plays, you know, Ann Darrow, who's the lead in this film with King Kong. So just, I'm gushing too much. Time to shut up, but Go get the King Kong DVD when it comes out next Tuesday. Oh my goodness. I think it's that time again. It's time to hear from Retro Crush listeners. They send me emails, and they even send me weirder things. Hey, Bill from Missouri. I didn't like those dirty panties from your mom. I thought that was bad taste. Actually, I don't think they were from his mom. They were from his grandma. Well, our email comes from Cliffy B, who writes, "Enjoying the podcast up in Canada. Not much else to enjoy up there except old Loverboy songs, I think. Hi, Robert. Love the podcast and enjoy listening to them on the way to work." Nobody ever listens to these on the way home from work. I guess it's just too depressing at that point. I've gotten hooked on the Ultra Lounge CDs and purchased Space Capade ones just a few weeks ago, which the song that you heard introducing this segment is from that CD as well. Whenever I hear the Powerhouse song, it makes me think about those Looney Tunes cartoons with those two jovial chipmunks going into the lumberyard trying to get their acorn tree back from being made into furniture. I really enjoyed Podcast 37 with the Little Marky If You're Not Depressed Yet You Will Be Now song and the art of having the street pickup in downtown Dallas. It did sound like Al Pacino having a conversation with Adam Sandler. If all the girls are that easy in Texas, I may have to make a plan, a vacation trip down there and let you know how it works. Please do. I was listening to your latest podcast and you were making up some funny porno movie titles for the new Harry Potter film. Here are ones I came up with. Harry Twatter and the Philosopher's Bone. Harry Twatter and the Chamber of Secretions. That one's not so good. And Harry Twatter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. I like that one a lot. Keep up the good work. Cliff from Toronto, Canada. Now, here's a special voicemail that we got. And if you have not called our voicemail number yet, please do. I'll give you the number at the end of the show.
Hey, my name is Nick, and I live in Folsom 916, so when I listened to your podcast for the first time, I was really amazed to hear Sacramento. Do you by chance know what's up with the whole 916 thing? I see kids at my school wearing 916 shirts. I thought maybe you would know. Well, anyway, I really enjoy the show, and it'd be cool sometime maybe I could see the Retro Crush studio or something. So keep up the good work, and I'll keep on listening. Bye.
Ah, well, thanks. It's nice to hear from Folsom. Folsom's a nice little city up in the hills from Sacramento. And as far as seeing the Retro Crush studio, it's not really open to the public right now. Because my wife's behind on her cleaning chores.
But you do all the housework.
Oh, that's right. I'm behind on my chores. Damn. That facade got torn through. Well, that's all the voicemail and mail we have today. Hey, a couple news items in the world of retro programming for you. According to TV shows on DVD, where I lift a lot of my news content from and don't pay for it. What a scam, huh? On March 7th, they're going to have the Scooby-Doo Dynamutt Hour on DVD. 4-DVD set. Pretty cool. And there's special interviews with people that have created the show. And a lot of really cool extras there. So it's neat to see some of the more obscure Hanna-Barbera stuff making it to DVD. Also, what I'm really happy to see is that Warner Brothers, again, wow, Warner Brothers just putting out the best stuff on DVD. Not only did they send me the King Kong stuff, but they've been sending a lot of cool cartoon things from Cartoon Network. And, you know, they've been releasing these Batman and Teen Titans DVDs in Justice League, but it's just like 3 or 4 episodes, or just 6 episodes, and they're finally getting their act together at that, and just releasing each season on one set, because I think people really like to buy the whole season at the same time. So they're going to do that for Teen Titans and the Batman in early February. And here's a really cool piece of news here. The headline says, AOL and Warner Brothers announced a deal to bring dozens of old TV shows to online viewers free of charge. This is an Associated Press article, and they say dozens of old shows, including Welcome Back, Kotter, will be available online and free of charge under a deal between America Online and Warner Brothers. And basically, they're going to put hundreds of their shows and at least 300 episodes a month in the first year, the company say. It's going to be through America Online only, so I don't know if you have to subscribe to them to see this stuff, but what a really cool thing that they're going to do. They're going to have some commercials embedded within the shows, but it will be free to download. And I guess their argument is that they have so many shows that are not in syndication anymore, like Kotter, Growing Pains, things of that nature, and you know, using the content for something like this is a way they can continue to make money off that. So, you know, America Online is doing that. Now, I know some of the other competing services weren't able to tap into some of those good shows, like I think Earthlink only has Small Wonder and Charles in charge. So not really going to be worth your time for that. Well, yikes, I went over 30 minutes. I've been having so many computer troubles. I finally worked out. I found a different program to make podcasts with because the one I was using before just kept crapping out on me. This episode you're hearing now is about the fourth try before I finally got this one made. So if this sounds worse or better, let me know. Please email me at rberry@retrocrush.com. Visit our site. We've got a lot of cool features up. We've got some interviews coming up as well. And we're going to do part two of our Nellie Olson interview tomorrow, so check that out. Allison Arngrim, who plays Nellie Olson. I'm going to leave you with a song from the group Lemon Demon, who gracefully let us... Too much wine tonight. But they let me play some of their songs for them. They got some really cool retro-themed songs about crayons and toys and whatnot. And here's a song about sea monkeys. So it's called Dead Sea Monkeys from Lemon Demon. Now go take on the day.